For football, at Duck Football. For the many other sports, try at Go Ducks Mosley. Rob Mosley checks in. Rob, how are we doing these days?
Well, I was hoping Ricard Raquel would have a hat trick for the Penguins in the first 10 minutes of his career in black and yellow. That has proved not to be the case, so I'm a little disappointed, but otherwise okay.
Wow, at least you're not setting the bar high or putting any pressure.
Is that too much to ask?
Yeah, it's like, are you counting down till he passes Gretzky? I mean, you know, no pressure there.
I am rooting against Ovechkin to catch Gretzky, that's for sure.
You are rooting against him. I was just going to be like, whoa. What world did I just fall into? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Now I feel a lot better about things. So let's start with another issue completely unrelated to Oregon, your L.A. Dodgers, who wind up signing a big gun like Freddie Freeman. I mean, you look at that lineup and maybe I'm not saying murderer's row, Yankees, big red machine, but you got to figure if they get above average starting and, you know, Blake Treinen handles the closer's role, you got to like their chances to win another 105, 108 or something like that.
And then choke in the playoffs, just like always, yes. Or just like most years, yeah. No, I actually watched them on the spring training game today and watched Freddie get a hit in his first spring training at bat, so it's pretty weird. Anytime like a guy that prominent switches teams, it's pretty fun to have him switch to your team. But actually, Charlie Steiner was doing the game, and then he talked to Tom Brenneman and made big red machines comparisons, and Brenneman thought it was fair. So, as they pointed out, better to have those conversations in September than March. But looks exciting, and I was thinking. Going back to my comment at the top about Ovechkin, I think, you know, people talk about, like, what would be, like, your safe word? Like, if I ever called you and needed to let you know I was kidnapped, but I couldn't let the kidnappers know, if I ever call you and say I'm rooting for Ovechkin, that's how you know I've been kidnapped. Call the police. Something is horribly wrong.
Oh, no, I would have, because we've had this conversation before. But, all right, let's get to some hoops. You were at the women's game in Knoxville, and pretty easy to track both your professional career, personal times. I know as a fan, you've checked off a lot of venues. Thompson Bowling, where Pat Summitt built, really the first dynasty that helped put the women's game on the map. What about the experience of getting to see a game there?
It was pretty great. Yeah, honestly, I was a little underwhelmed by the crowd. You know, with all due respect to the Tennessee fans that were there, it was a solid crowd, but, you know, I was expecting to be kind of overwhelmed by the fan presence there, and it wasn't quite that, given the tradition. And obviously it's been, you know, the last, you know, I don't know, decade and a half hasn't been, you know, as consistently world-beating as they were in, you know, what was it, like the 90s, early 2000s. But yeah, it was still fun. It's still just amazing to walk into a building like that, kind of like when we played at UConn a couple years ago and just see all those banners hanging. Eight national championship banners, you know, and then you look it up, and there's also five championship games they lost. So like 13 times they played for the Natty. It's just ridiculous. And and we went to the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame, which is in Knoxville as well. And you know, they do a good job of that too, of kind of showing the you know, they like to say they celebrate the past, the present, and the future. A great job of celebrating the past, obviously, but the present as well is kind of cool. They have team photos for all of the current reigning national championship teams at every level of basketball, including junior college. And so Shania Pinto, who's on Oregon's team, didn't even know that was the case and was walking through the Hall of Fame and just stumbled upon a photo of herself in the Hall of Fame. So mere mortals like you and I can only imagine what that must feel like to be walking through your sports Hall of Fame and see yourself featured there. So that was a pretty fun moment.
Yeah, if it's the Degenerate Gamblers Hall of Fame in New Jersey, I'd be looking for my photo. But
you expect to see yourself, right? You probably paid for the building.
Yeah. As for the game itself, I guess it's kind of become a cliche with this team. Moments, flashes of brilliance, you know, the game-tying three by Tahina Pau-Pau, the great performance of Niara Sabali. But in the end, kind of just unable to make shots or stops. Accurate to say, Rob, the loss to Belmont might maybe a cliche, a microcosm, some good stuff, but just not enough.
100%, yeah. And I'll be honest. I mean, I was just struck so often the last couple of weeks by the similarities between the men's team and the women's team this year and some of the similar frustrations and you know, the ability to put together at times. You know, particularly both programs in January had times when they just looked like everything was clicking and they were really heading in the right direction. And then February and March for both proved so frustrating. You know, neither one could really get consistent three-point shooting. You know, I think obviously for the men's program when Will Richardson falls ill and then has to sit out, you know, that really impacted them. And on the women's side, you know, when you lose a Jazz Shelley and a Taylor Mike Sell and, you know, just, you know, the kids that were still here just weren't hitting shots as consistently. You know, both programs, you kind of felt like they lacked that kind of one go-to score that when you need a bucket, you knew who to look for. You know, I think the women had, you know, more of a threat that way in the Arasabli, but, you know, even she had times when, you know, she just struggled to finish at the rim in situations where you felt like, I would have thought that would have gone down. So, just for both programs, just you know, it's great to say, just like football, you know, football wins 10 games, men's basketball wins 20 games, women's basketball wins 20 games. All three of them, you know, all three of those seasons had their frustrations. So to experience that level of success in kind of years that almost feel like down years, as ridiculous as it is to say, in the big picture, it was just it's been that kind of year, unfortunately, around here.
Yeah, if your down year is 20 wins and you don't think that's saying something, ask Oregon State men's basketball fans what a real down year is.
Right. I think it's totally realistic and I reasonable, and I totally understand, you know, frustrations about both those programs and football as well, because, you know, it felt like in all three cases there was a point maybe two-thirds of the way through each of those three seasons when you felt like the ceiling could be reached and the ceiling was really high. And then all three, by the end of the year, you felt like, maybe that was a mirage. You know, it didn't end up quite being the year that we hoped it could be. But yeah, and then you got to keep in mind the big picture and how nice it is to be saying that about years that also where you saw just a lot of sustained success and many more wins than losses too.
Talking with Rob Mosley, GoDucks.com. And along those lines, you know, nobody's pleased with the way things ended, but this isn't UConn or Tennessee. I mean, the Vols have been to the dance 40 years in a row. They did run second in the Pac-12, and I insist that making the big dance is still an accomplishment. But I thought Coach Graves, Rob, made a good point. He says, you know, we're not about to just blow it up and go back to the drawing board. We just need to make some tweaks.
Right. Yeah, I think, you know, it's such a strange time in sports, and particularly kind of for, you know, folks like you and I that have been around the block, you maybe once or more, twice more than I, but, you know, with the portal and everything else, it just, there's even more uncertainty than before at the end of every team season. And so, you know, we've sort of gotten used to it on the men's side, just because that's how, you know, Coach Altman's program has operated since he got here. And just men's basketball nationwide, you're used to a little more short-term attachment to players. But, you know, obviously there was some turnover in the women's program last year, and you expect there to be some to some extent this year. But, yeah, I mean, there's so many, you know, talented kids, you know, kids with heart, with a lot of potential, and just the chance to just work through some things and establish, you know, certain roles and work on certain skills. You really feel like there can be really bright days ahead, and it's just a matter of kind of grinding through some of the sources of frustration, taking advantage of what you already do well, and then, you know, adding some pieces in terms of recruiting and whatnot, and just trying to build on this.
As far as the men, I mean, we already talked about the similarities. But I thought the commentary from Dana Altman after, I mean, this is a guy who's always very measured. And if there's a problem, he likes to point the finger at himself. But when he says something like, "I didn't have to kick guys out of the gym," safe to say that he accepts blame as always, but he really was not pleased with, I guess, the level of commitment he got from certain players.
Yeah, you know, I do think that speaks to just how freakishly motivated guys like Dylan Brooks and Peyton Pritchard and others have been, you know, in recent years. I mean, he's gotten used to having guys who set a tone that way for the program. And I think, you know, not to just keep coming back to this crossover between the two programs, but, you know, Kelly Graves made the point, too, that, you know, with COVID the last few years, there's just a little bit less kind of face-to-face contact, you know, when you're talking to, you know, a potential transfer or something like that, to really get to know them, get to know kind of what makes them tick, kind of, you know, how self-motivated or not they might be, just how much you're going to have to be on them or not. And there's so many different little ways that the pandemic continues to reverberate, you know, the chemistry that teams missed out on not being able to play, get together as much in the off season because of protocols that might have been in place, you know, strength training that might have been missed out on the last year or two that kind of builds on itself and can you know, have repercussions year over year for throughout a player's career almost. So it has been such a hard time these last couple of years to run a program, particularly, you know, when you got guys like Dana Altman and Kelly Graves who've been used to doing things a certain way for multiple decades, and then just everything gets upset. So I just think, you know, that too is kind of a source of frustration for both those guys.
Yeah, it's a subtle thing, but to be able to sit in a den and look somebody in the eye, Coach Graves talked about that, and I'm actually going to talk with him about that in about 20 minutes. But a couple final thoughts. Rob Mosley, GoDucks.com. So you got to develop a personal relationship with Marcus Mariota. You were there at the Heisman. You went down with him, obviously all the games, to the awards show in Orlando. So my thought was, well, Joey made us have to root for the Lions. Marcus made us root for the Titans. So is this going to be the ultimate test of loving a former Duck? Now we've got to root for the Falcons. I mean,
yeah. No, hey, I am completely a homer on this one. I am all in on rooting for him in whatever situation he's in. I mean, I'm a 49er fan, and he could go to the Rams, the Seahawks, whoever, and I would be all in on that. I mean, I so badly want to see him get one more legitimate shot at running a team, being a number one guy, and, you know, how you define legitimate, you know, in terms of the quality of the talent around him, whatever. You know, I just want to see him be a game one starter, be given a reasonable chance to try to establish himself with a team, and see how it goes. Because I think if that didn't happen one more time, I think we'd all be left wondering, what if? And that's, you know, that just stinks as a sports fan. So I'm so happy for him. You know, he's, you know, apparently reunited with a coach he's comfortable with, and excited to see how it plays out. But no, I will have no problem rooting for the Falcons, not one little bit.
Well, I've got my over-under the end of March Madness that we start to see our first Mariota Falcon jerseys making the rounds in Eugene.
That's probably fair.
I wanted to talk quickly about baseball because you knew the team would have a different look. I mean, you know, they lost a lot from the heart of the order, and they had the rough opening series, but then they take 2 out of 3 at number 2 Stanford. They just swept Utah. And I feel like, you know, turning over key roster spots and being able to maintain this level of competitive excellence, and I know it's early, but early on, pretty impressive job by Coach Woz and his guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and particularly if you look at the pitching staff and the situation there, I mean, if we already knew the entire weekend rotation was gone. And then if you had said, oh, the Friday night starter would be injured and the Sunday and midweek roles would be really up in the air and the Saturday kid would be a little bit up and down, and yet still no one would believe you'd be off of the start you did. But this team, you know, the back end of the bullpen, it kind of echoes a Coach Horton. You know, it's set up as a team that can really win the late innings. And the offense is just relentless. And speaking of owning the late innings, it just never feels like they're out of a game. So credit to Jack Martyr, assistant coach there, and that whole staff. But just the intensity that Mark Wazikowski brings to that program day in, day out, you know, resonates throughout the roster. And you know, I think that's why you see a team that's capable of losing its whole rotation, having all but one of its starters to enter the season be sidelined for one reason or another, and just rolling with the punches and still putting up runs and winning games and getting enough out to get W's. So it's really impressive. And honestly, the softball team's been doing the same thing. I mean, their pitching staff, no Brook Yanez, without their top two starters recently due to injuries, and yet still finding ways to score runs and win games and get out. So, Coach Lombardi's team is doing the same thing. So just kudos to both those programs, and we'll see where things go the next couple months.
Yeah, and now with basketball officially over, we turn to the diamond, and it should be a great run both ways. Folks, he is Rob Mosley of GoDucks.com, editor-in-chief. And, of course, you could keep up with him. You have options on Twitter, at DuckFootball, at GoDucksMosley. Rob, always fun, always great information. Enjoy the hockey. And like you said, if you call me and you're cheering for Ovi, I'll get you some help.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Steve.
All right, take it easy, Rob.